of silence. The truth can't be found. That's a conspiracy of silence that's tearing us down. The conspiracy of silence.
And we're live, folks. Welcome.
All right. Welcome to the monthly Malfeasance Report. I am Clint Richardson. With me is Mel Hallett. I'm not sure she's on the line yet, but we'll get her on pretty soon here. Just wanted to open up the story with a little bit of local news today. You know, I'm from Utah. We've got some pretty crazy things going on here. But, you know, this one is going to take the cake for me. This is going to be my rat of the month. In the Salt Lake Tribune here, I'm just going to read this verbatim from the actual paper. It says, bill would allow teens to test out of financial literacy. Some high school students might get to skip financial literacy class if they can prove proficiency in the subject. So we're talking about a 16 or 17-year-old, maybe even a 15-year-old, stating that they have financial literacy and therefore do not have to take the class. The House on Thursday, meaning the House in Utah, passed HB House Bill 156, which would allow students who pass a financial literacy test to opt out of taking the class, which is now a requirement for high school graduation. Bill sponsor Representative Marilyn Newbold, my rat of the month, Republican South Jordan, said the bill is an attempt to clean up public education laws, removing items that are obsolete or no longer needed. So her opinion apparently is that financial literacy, including balancing your checkbook and such crazy things like that, are obsolete and no longer needed. She said when asking students that requirements they felt were unnecessary, financial literacy was most often their response. She said financial literacy concepts could be taught in other classes. The students, or they, quote, indicated that this was a class they really didn't feel they had time for. So what do we have here, folks? Let's break this down real quick. Let me repeat just this one section. The representative, Ms. Marilyn Newbold, said when asking students what requirements they felt were unnecessary, financial literacy was most often their response. Students said to the representative that they didn't want to take a financial literacy class. Now, I think back to my childhood and my ridiculous high school education, and heck, if I had a choice like that, not knowing what I know now, I certainly would have opted out financial literacy and mathematics and history and just about everything else. Maybe with a metal shop, maybe auto shop, and maybe physical education might have been my choices to actually stay in. And then recess. I probably would have gone for recess because, you know, recess or break was, you know, that 15-minute break between classes. But are you serious, woman? Are you seriously going to go to students 14 through 17 years of age and ask them what they think they need to learn in high school? Is that what we've become? Seriously, have we gone so far down the tubes? I mean, besides the fact that we have a department, an executive branch of government, which is prima facie law, that states and dictates, as does the Communist Manifesto, 10th plank, that we need an education system, a public education system, monitored and regulated by this central body that in a government that isn't even part of any of the states, the 50 states united, Washington, D.C., this crazy group of folks out there. That, bad enough that we have that, which takes away your parental rights of education, but now they're actually going and bypassing parental guidance and parental thought and what their kids should learn, and they're asking students what they should learn. So my only conclusion is that this woman sees future voters in high school students. They are going to be voting at some point. They're going to remember this really cool chick who came to them and asked them, "Hey, you guys want to get rid of a class? You got this horrible class that would teach you all of the malfeasance, all of the financial crimes that we're committing in Congress here. You want to get rid of that class? You want? Of course, a woman like this, who's part of this structure which benefits herself." Financial crimes, organized crimes, which we call government, these private corporations we call government, is going to go and try to get rid of the financial literacy class. Oh, my goodness. Hal, Mel, do we have you on?
Yes, we do.
Oh, well, sounds like we might, but I don't hear her.
You don't? Okay. Let me see if I need
Well, anyway, this is, again, Rat of the Month is Representative, what was her name? Marilyn Newbold. Sounds like Mel is on the line, but I don't hear her. So if someone could
tell me
what her voice is coming through, that would be great.
Is that any better? You still don't hear me.
Okay. This is what you get for grassroots, people. This is what grassroots is all about. Right here, right now. You know, one thing I didn't get to say last week, and I apologize if I'm talking over you, Mel, because I can't tell if you're on, but one of the discussions that I wanted to talk about is the story of one Mr. Boycott. One of my favorite stories, and one of the things that we don't ever really give credit to is this gentleman in Ireland who created the very concept of the word that we throw around arrogantly and without thought. The word boycott is an act of voluntarily abstaining from using, buying, or dealing with a person, organization, or country as an expression of protest, usually, of course, for political reasons. It can be a form of consumer activism, which is exactly what this whole monthly mishmash of radio show hosts are trying to get folks to understand. We can boycott the very system that is destroying our livelihood. But the word itself is so important to understand. It gives me so much joy to know that this word actually has such a wonderful background, and I, you know, I don't know if this has been talked about very much, but I'm going to tell you right now what the story of boycott is. The word boycott entered into the English language. This could be found on Wikipedia. It's very simple to find. Just type in the word boycott. The word boycott entered the English language during the Irish Land War and is derived from the name of Captain Charles Boycott, the land agent of an absentee landlord, Lord Erne, who lived in Lowmask House in County Mayo, Ireland, who was subject to social ostracism organized by the Irish Land League in 1880. As harvests had been poor that year, Lord Erne offered his tenants a 10% reduction in their rents. In September of that year, protesting tenants demanded a 25% reduction, of which Lord Erne refused. Mr. Boycott then attempted to evict 11 tenants from the land, proposing that when dealing with tenants who take farms where another tenant was evicted, rather than resorting to violence, everyone in the locality should shun them. In other words, boycott them, you see. The tactic was first applied to boycott this gentleman when the alarm was raised about the evictions. Despite the short-term economic hardship to those undertaking this action, boycott soon found himself completely isolated from the people that he was tyrannizing. His workers stopped in the fields and the stables, as well as in his house. So his house slaves said, no more. I can't work for you in this way. You're not doing the right thing. Local businessmen stopped trading with him, and the local postman even refused to deliver his mail. This concerted action taken against boycott meant that he was unable to hire anyone to harvest his crops. Imagine if we boycotted Monsanto and no one could harvest those crops. Eventually, though, he did get some volunteers from out of the city to do the work, and they were escorted to and from his farm by 1,000 policemen and soldiers, despite the fact that the local land league leaders had said that there would be no violence. And in fact, no violence materialized. This protection ended up costing far more than the harvest was worth. After the harvest, the boycott was successfully continued. Within weeks, boycott's name was everywhere. The word boycott became a new concept. It wasn't just a name, it was a concept. It was used by the Times in November in 1880 as a term for organized isolation. According to an account in the book The Fall of Feudalism in Ireland by Michael DeWitt, the term was promoted by John O'Malley of County Mayo to signify ostracism applied to a landlord or agent like boycott. Well, guess what? Who is your landlord, folks? You can go on. You can read the rest of the story, and again, at Wikipedia, just type in boycott. But who is your landlord, and who is your agent? Or I should say, who is the agent of that landlord? Well, your landlord internationally is your government, because, like it or not, you're under international admiralty law. Always have been, always will be. We were a set of international colonies set forth under international law, and we turned into international states, which are still under admiralty law. There is no doubt about this.
Wait, can you hear me yet?
The agents of that landlord are simply folks like the Federal Reserve, the financial agent of the United States, this international corporation. Okay, so these are your agents. The Social Security Administration is very similar to the Federal Reserve in that it is a separate entity of the United States. It's still part of the United States, but it has its own, limited lawmaking abilities, and it still has to follow all the laws within. These are your agents, and these are the folks that you should be boycotting. Again, the history of the word boycott is very important for us, especially in this movement, to understand. Now, we're going to try again to see if we have Miss Mel Hallett with us today. Mel, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I just hope you can hear me.
Well, I see your volume moving, but I don't hear you. And if Mike could tell me if he hears him, that would be great. I guess not. All right, once again, our grassroots movement.
Something keeps setting my mic down. There I am.
Gee golly, What else can we talk about today that is malfeasance? You know, for everything is malfeasance. There's one thing I've discovered that I'd like to share with people. You know, I opened a bank account not too long ago, and I was forced to sign what is called a signature card. And that signature card, it's like signing a contract without actually being able to see the contract. Now, on the back of that signature card, it states that by signing this signature card, I agree to follow all of the rules of the bank. Well, wait a minute. What are the rules of the bank? At the time, it didn't give me any pause. I just assumed that I was signing, over to put my money in the bank. It would hold my money and then return that money to me after I went away and came back to get it. I could close the account at any time and get my money. Well, the problem is it's not my money. No money is my money. Even if I'm holding a Federal Reserve note, it is the Federal Reserve's money because it is the agent, the financial agent of the United States. The money is produced by the by the mint through the Treasury, which is also the Treasury of the Federal Reserve, and then it is sold to the Federal Reserve. Now, so what does the signature card have to do with it? Unfortunately, the reason that we're all liable for so many things and why I'm so into the boycott on a total level, including government offices, including your driver's license, including your signature card at your bank, all of these things. Insurance is another one. You got to understand that these things that are insuring your property, your life, your death, they all have a financial interest in your life, your death, and your property, which is really not your property at all, because you're under admiralty law. So the signature card is like signing a contract, because you've agreed, just like on a Microsoft agreement, when you digitally click into your your contract, that you agree to the terms and services provided. Of course, those say that your information can be sold everywhere in the universe. That's okay. Your signature card at your bank is actually a very important document, because if you were to go and you were to ask for the contract or the rules of the bank, which is not the rules of that bank, it's the rules of every bank that come down from this agent, these agents, you'll see that it'll be about a 450 page contract. Literally a contract. It states that you must follow all of the rules that come with that signature. Well, guess what, folks? Unfortunately, that means that you must follow Title 28 and Title 42, which, of course, are the income tax rules and regulations, which by themselves are actually prima facie law, meaning that they require your consent. But unfortunately, any contract, the way that the Constitution works, that in my world, this document that's becoming more of an enemy than a protectorate, the Constitution was just a declaration. The Constitution was a declaration by a couple people. It's not a contract. It has no authority whatsoever without my consent. It is nothing. It really is, as George Bush said, a gosh darn piece of paper. Literally, without the consent of the governed, that's what it is. That's what every law out there really is. The problem is, and the reason why judges will say you can't bring that Constitution in this courtroom, we're a courtroom of contracts. You see, people have made various private contracts, private business contracts, and any contract, or for that matter, any treaty, international treaty or treatise, rises above the Constitution, rises above that law that we assume grants us rights. In fact, a private contract will always trump any constitutional law. You are in a private contract. And when you go to court, the court, of course, is there to enforce the contract. Now, Looks like we had some, well, it looks like I had some technical difficulties on my end. Welcome back to Malfeasance Report. Mel, I
and I'm here. I've been here all along, but I'm just listening.
My bad. I did something wrong. I'm not sure still what, but hopefully it won't happen again. But again, we're a grassroots thing, so that's what it's all about. Anyway, I have no idea how long I was talking without being on the radio, so... I guess my point was that you all out there listening whether it should go to the bank and really learn what you've signed on your little signature card with the bank, because you're probably going to find out.
Those little signature cards aren't so little anymore. Now they're it's kind of a stack of papers, so they like more signatures. Some reason,
because the last thing it's going to say is that you agree to all the bank rules, all the everything that has to do with it. So, anyway, what's going on with you, Mel?
Well, I've just been trying to do my radio and put out the word about United We Strike and why we are doing what we're doing, because the time is getting nigh if it hasn't already passed us in some respects. But you know what? What do? We got to keep up and keep trying to get the message out that, don't play their system. Let's create our own and theirs isn't working for us. It only works for them.
It's true. It's true. Wait, you ever heard that story about the English boycott?
No.
I'm assuming that got out. Again, I don't know how long I was on and how long I was just talking to myself. But,
but the radio. I mean, this, every day is a new day with radio.
Well, if in case people missed it, you know, the etymology of the word boycott is very important for people to understand, and you can just type it into Wikipedia and learn where the word boycott came from. Pretty fascinating story and very relevant to what we're doing today.
But I didn't get the story that you were going to tell me.
Well, I don't want to go through the whole thing again if I already went through it. But
I didn't get that one either.
Oh, maybe Mike can tell me if that actually came through.
He said you can, but do not go back again on your boycott story.
Okay. Oh, good times. Well, anyway, you know, Mel, I was talking about this woman we have here in Utah, and she literally wrote a bill based on going to the students of high school and asking them which classes they didn't like, basically, or which ones they thought were unnecessary. So she had a bunch.
He said, please do go back. He said, please. I'm sorry, I'm getting a message. You must not see it. So there, I guess they missed the story, so they want to hear it too. And they're laughing.
Okay.
Hey, Clint, if you haven't done this a few times on the radio, then I guess you're getting your feet wet today. But
I guess so. I after hundreds of radio shows, I'd think my feet would be wet. But well, very, 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 very relevant to the whole purpose we are here is the story of boycott. Who is this? Where did this word come from? Boycott is literally an act of voluntarily abstaining from using, buying, or dealing with a person, an organization, or country as an expression of protest, usually for political reasons. It can be a form of consumer activism, which is exactly what we're trying to do here with United We Strike, and what a lot of people are now starting to promote around the world. Of course, I promote the full kit and caboodle, meaning that we should be boycotting government as well, because really government is a series of private contracted corporations. The IRS, the Federal Reserve, the Social Security Administration are all private corporations that are contracted, meaning that they are the agents of the United States. The Bar Association is another, of course, a good example where this copyrighted set of law is enforced via the government's consent to allow the bar to be the law of the United States. So the word boycott entered the English language during the Irish Land Wars, derived from the name of Captain Charles Boycott, who was an English land agent of an absentee landlord named Lord Erne, who lived in the County Mayo of Ireland. He was subject to what they call social ostracism, organized by the Irish Land League in 1880. I think everybody can agree that as far as protesters go, the Irish are the winners, in especially compared to Americans. But as harvest had been poor that year, Lord Erne offered his tenants a 10% reduction in their rents. In September of that year, protesting tenants demanded a 25% reduction, which Lord Erne refused. Boycott then attempted, Mr. Boycott, I should say, Charles Boycott, then attempted to evict 11 tenants from the land. Charles Purnell, in a speech in Ennis prior to the events in County Mayo, proposed that when dealing with tenants who take farms where another tenant was evicted rather than resorting to violence, everyone in the locality should shun them. That is a boycott. While Purnell's speech did not refer to land agents or landlords, the tactic was first applied to boycott when the alarm was raised about the evictions. Despite the short-term economic hardship to those undertaking this action, boy, that sounds like us, doesn't it? Boycott soon found himself completely isolated. His workers stopped work in the fields and stables, as well as in the house. So his house slaves basically gave up, said no. It's not worth it. Local businessmen stopped trading with him, and the local postman refused to deliver his mail. This is the origin of the word boycott, and I think it's a very important story, a very important part of history that we all need to take into consideration, and we need to honor this guy in a way that we honor I mean, we have national holidays for presidents of the United States, for God's sake, where we honor these men who have completely stripped our rights, who have completely just destroyed what could have been a wonderful, you know, country. And here is this gentleman boycott, completely unknown in the English language, the actual etymology or the actual history of where the word came from. It turns out, it's a man, a very, very, very important man who, whom suffered the very meaning of his last name. And it's such an important thing to comprehend, I think. Again, you could just type this into Wikipedia and go over what happened, the full story. It's very interesting. And again, I think it needs to really get into the consciousness of the United We Strike folks here.
There were several things that come to mind when you're speaking of this, but this is, we need to be, I have a hard time with trying to do too much organized boycotting. If we all just pick our own way to become that we need to boycott in so many other aspects of our life, not just today, but you know, I believe you're talking about that when you were stating that earlier, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's not just a matter of saying, okay, well, we don't like Walmart, we're going to boycott Walmart, because guess what? The dollar store has the same products. The other stores out there have the same products. So it's much more than just a boycott of the stores or the corporations. It's a boycott. It literally has to be a boycott of the very thing that is allowing this to happen in the first place, which is government. From it being the stockholder of the corporations, literally the owner and shareholder proxy voter of what happens in those corporations, from the fact that the government is allowing these corporations.
You know, one of the things that we might do when that came to mind when looking at your videos was the fact that, you know, those of us that have pensions through our these pools of money that are in our municipalities and the like. To go and start asking them where they're these funds are investing, because that is where we can start with getting them cognizant of where we need to start withdrawing our money from these Microsofts and all these others that are investing outside of our country, and start bringing it back home. We're running into this on these big infrastructure projects in my area, where the local contractors can't compete, so they still go out of the area, and it's set up and rigged that way.
Well, sure, and again, why is that? You always got to question why. Whenever you see these things, so okay, well, why is that happening? Oh, well, because those big employers of Chinese workers that they're importing are actually American companies. They're companies that the government, U.S. government, has stock investments in and are making a profit by insisting that taxpayer money go to fund public infrastructure by sending it overseas, but to a corporation that is literally owned by stock investment collectively throughout the government, through all its institutional funds, its pension funds, and everything else. And you'll find that that's the case with everything. Every single question, every single time that you say, well, why is this company getting a no-bid contract to do something? You know, again, why isn't the oil spill cleaned up? Again, it's really a simple answer once you grasp who the owner of these companies are, who's calling the shots within these companies, and also that same entity, which is government, is also calling the shots on how that company operates within the United States and abroad. So we're
competing with ourselves, in a sense.
And we don't know it. It's feeding. We continuously feed our slavery by using Federal Reserve notes. Same thing. It's the best example I think of a known slavery, with the slaves almost volunteering to be slaves, is the fact that we use Federal Reserve notes. We fund our own slavery, and by paying taxes, by committing or submitting, I should say, to new taxes, property taxes, income taxes, all of these taxes, we're funding our own slavery. And this is this is why the corporations are obviously guilty as charged. But the root of the problem is always going to be traced back to government because of this conflict of interest. You can't expect a corporation whose job it is to make its shareholders money, a profit. No corporation exists, even a nonprofit doesn't exist without making a profit. So you cannot expect government to do something that's going to harm its bottom line. Its bottom line is no longer the people.
The government is
self-interested. It is not interested in helping the people.
But we need to be asking the questions and sitting in these meetings. It doesn't take but one or two people in a lot of these meetings to be sitting there, because a lot of them are vacant of the public. You know, their average everyday meeting, business meeting, doesn't have people sitting there, at least in my community.
No, it's true. And you know, most of the time those meetings are strictly a inconvenience. They're something that they lawfully have to do. You know, every time, guess what, folks? Every time they spray chemtrails locally, every time they manipulate the weather over your home, there had to have been a public hearing where you could have gone and sat and protested that. So you can point at the sky all you want. You can say, dang, those horrible corporations and that horrible government that's spraying stuff over us, manipulating the weather, playing God. But the truth of the matter is, they put a little ad in the classified section under public notices that says exactly what they're going to do. They tell you in the newspaper when they're going to hold the meeting. They tell you the contractor, the company that's going to spray. And then they do it, because no one knows that the public the public notice is one of the oldest and most important ways to get things done. Every single thing that gets done in city council are generally posted in the public notice section of the newspaper. When you, for instance, if you ever wanted to do something like separate your citizenship, get rid of your citizenship, you would post it as a public notice in the newspaper. It's one of the most important things, and yet they know that none of you are going to be looking at that. Because you don't have time for that. You've got three jobs. You've got five kids to feed. You've got all these things, all these material needs, all these bills that for all the electricity that you're required to power all of these toys that you have. No way you're going to look at public notices and notice that every time they spray a chemtrail, they're putting a public notice in the newspaper.
Yeah, but don't be surprised that you get involved in the middle of some cat and mouse games that they do, because even on some of these public meetings that they hold, that, you know, they already have an infrastructure that some of these out-of-town professionals come to the meetings to put on. These people are schooled in the ability to bypass when the people do object. And we've got one where they're trying to have an art project of Christo. I mean, this thing's been going on for almost 12, 15 years now. and they're still fighting over, you know, whether he can do this project. But they still keep pushing it forward with everybody objecting. So sometimes it's hard to tell them no, but the best thing I can say is keep putting, you know, sticks in their spokes. If they're not going to listen a lot of times, and other times I'm looking for the thing that they're not paying attention to where you can make a difference. Sometimes it's finding the crack in the wall that they're not paying attention to that can maybe get what you want and need done by looking for what they're not paying attention to. And that's where I'm talking, when I was talking about going to these meetings, is when the ones that they're not, you know, thinking you're going to show up to, and that, or the ones that are the business, you know, we've got like a council meeting. Well, I found out they have a business meeting before they have a council meeting. Well, this is the one that you need to be going to, because the other one's already, the agenda's already set, and they pretty much move forward. So it's just kind of a formality. Do you see what I'm saying, Clint?
Oh, absolutely. It is a formality. It is something that has to be done by law, and that's the whole point.
You know, right, it does.
Just like the comprehensive annual financial reports, they would rather not have that be a public document. But it is law that it has to be, and therefore I can access it, and for who knows how long. Already in Utah, they're passing laws that are secrecy laws, and that's another thing I'd like to get into, but it's so long that basically every document is going to be secret. So this is literally, when you go to a city council meeting, it really is. I mean, they offer a time for rebuttal, and they offer a time for public opinion, and so, but unless you're actually introducing law into that and tell them that they can't do it, you can tell them they're bastards and that you don't want anything to happen, but unless you actually introduce a law that says that what you're doing is wrong and you will be punished, via the very system that you're operating under, they're going to continue with their thing. They have a pre-planned set thing that they are doing, and this public meeting that we're attending is literally just a formality, as you say. They're going to do it unless someone educated actually gets in there and says, well, if you do this, then I'm going to take you to court, and I'm going to put you in jail for treason or whatever it is that you see. There's nothing to stop them. No opinion is ever going to stop them, because you must understand the term public opinion, it doesn't mean you, it doesn't mean anybody listening. Public opinion is a term coined by the Bar Association. When the Bar creates a law, a precedent for which other laws can be utilized within the court, that is public opinion. Public opinion is literally the Bar Association. So you can't consider that every time you go into and say, wait a minute, and hold up an angry sign, that that's going to mean anything, because there's no law behind it. They don't need your permission, I guess is the point, because we don't have that form of government. We have a democracy, not a republic. So they can do anything they want. And, you know, this is important to understand. And let me just get into this real quick, if you don't mind, because I think that, you know, when we went to a democracy, the so-called, democracy that we're supposed to be, democracy really is another word for oligarchy or communism. A democracy is really 51% of the people ruling over the other 49. That's not in any way, that has nothing to do with a republic, which is always the the minority of one shall always rule supreme over the majority of 99. There's no way that you can take away a right from a person, you know, just because you have a majority. That's what a republic truly stands for. So what happened is when we started, you know, We have these elected officials, and we call them representatives. But what we really need to have is something called a delegate. And let me tell you the difference between what we have and what we should have. For a delegate would be someone that we would send to Washington, and they would actually represent our district. Okay, our districts are actually federal districts, so really – right now, the representatives are only interested in representing their district, which is a federal district, and that's not the people. But a delegate would be someone that we all got together, either for our state in a state senator or for our little area, our county, for instance, and that person would go, and they would all get together from all across the country, and they would write their laws. Okay, but before that law could ever get passed, they would have to bring that law back to each state, and each state or each county or district would have to vote and say, well, yeah, we agree with that law. Okay, but what we have is the complete opposite of that. What we do is we go through these mock elections. We get someone up there who we are then giving the power to represent us in our decision. So not only are they going and writing the law, but then they are deciding on whether or not that law is lawful. So they vote on their own law. How can we possibly expect there not to be a complete corrupt system when we are giving these people carte blanche, our permission, by being a representative of us to create laws which will then restrict us? You see, the difference between these two concepts is everything. One being a democracy and one being a republic. And as soon as you get that, as soon as you understand that you've relinquished your rights in lieu of the privileges that our representatives are creating in their law and then voting on and making it law, whereas the way it should be is that, of course, we're voting as the people, right? So there's a big, big, huge difference between these two concepts. And right now we are in what amounts to communism because we are in the second form, which is the representative form, not delegates. So right from the beginning, I mean, we've been in this system, and this is why all of these horrible laws get passed, because the people have absolutely no say as to what gets passed in law. The people are completely out of the equation, and that is because government has allowed these private corporations, and guess what? The Senate is a private corporation incorporated in the state of Virginia.
Really? Okay.
We have allowed these private corporations, all of them being employees of the main corporation, the federal government, we've allowed them to create our law for us because we are literally giving them permission to do so. Just like when we go into court and we get an attorney, we are giving up all of our rights as one of the people. We're becoming a person, and we're saying that we cannot represent ourselves. We're not smart enough. We're not good enough. We must have representation in court. This is why I will never, ever, in my whole life, ever retain an attorney or a lawyer, because I don't want to be represented by the very thing that makes the laws, which is the Bar Association. Okay. Likewise, every time you vote for a representative, it's the same as a representative attorney. Most of them are attorneys, in fact. So we've got a serious problem here that goes way beyond just the corporation selling us poison plastic. Okay, we've got a situation where the people have absolutely no authority left to them. We have the illusion of authority, as I love when George Carlin talks about, but we have no lawmaking authority unless we actually get out and do it and organize and do it. So anyway.
Okay, so what do you suggest that we, I mean, other than what we're doing this weekend and then on every the 15th of every month, what are some of the other suggestions you feel that we should be looking at so that we can start making a difference?
Well, I think it takes more than just a boycott. I think that part of that should be looking into ways to advocate for each other, meaning such things as people's grand juries, not citizens' grand juries, but people's grand juries, where we actually take a case, say an income tax case, and we actually look at it and we say, well, wait a minute, we've reviewed this, and obviously this person who didn't even know he was a person. He's a living human being who's been assigned personhood, corporate personhood, via the Social Security number and all these contracts. He signed a contract that was steeped in fraud because he didn't know what was happening. So what we need to do is we need to get together. We need to get 25 people to form a people's grand jury. And we need to come together and we need to say, well, hey, this guy is in jail for not paying income tax. Let's just use an example. And we just say, well, that's not right, because he didn't know the contract that he was in was not fully disclosed. He could never have possibly acquiesced to that contract. We need to take our decision, which says that this person is innocent of this crime for fraud. And we need
to... Looks like we got Karen in here.
Yeah, we do. Oops. We need to take that to a court of law, because the people's law is always going to trump any kind of legal code, and the people need to get together and start.
Oh, that's me too. Setting a record for OSMs. I am so sorry.
Okay,
oh man, Clint, you have just been rocking it. This is still me. Let me find my. There, did I turn myself off? As far as turning everybody else off, too, I'm sure.
I don't know.
We don't have an echo. Well, I was listening. I'm counting the OSMs. I'm back. Right now is when the gardener outside chooses to mow the lawn, and he'll be buying his power mower at any time. So I can't stay in here, but... Clint, thank you so very much for the whole boycott reason, and Mel. And, you know, this proves we're a team. No matter what happens behind the scenes, we are a team of international people who refuse to be accomplices, who understand that we are the power behind these criminals, and we can simply stop it by saying no. I've got to get off now. Here comes the mower behind me. And listeners, hang out with us. You know, have a drink, relax. Let's count the OSMs. So far, we are setting a record for the oh, crap moment. See you in a bit.
Well, Karen, all I can say is that that gardener better be a U.S. citizen.
He's the son-in-law of the owners, who's fallen on bad times, which actually are good times, because they wound up back at home in the primo condo they used to rent out. But he's got to do gardening and cleanup, so, you know, I'm looking forward to a much nicer place here in 2012. And right now I'm going to get off while I still can, because he's going to be buzzing by at any second.
All right. Good for you.
Okay, so Clint, you were talking about these citizen boards. My question to you is, okay, I can see getting in this direction, but I'm wondering, do you think they'd really let us do that at this point without, you know, getting a little more vocal on our own rights, so that we have that ability to override them if they object?
You know, it's funny that you say that, because, you know, the more I research, the more I look into things, and the more I start understanding true history, not the history that's been foisted on us, not the romanticism of the Constitution, not the, you know, the founding fathers and all these things. The truth of the matter is that we literally have a corporate structure on top of us that is really suppressing everything. And the only, you know, my conclusion after many of these trips into the void here is that we really, the ultimate solution, it boils down to getting rid of our citizenship, because citizenship literally makes it's like being an employee. In fact, that's what they call it. You're literally an employee of the corporation. You have to follow all those rules as a citizen every time you make one of these contracts that I was talking about earlier. And so the only thing I can think of is literally, okay, there's a very simple step. It's actually in the U.S. code. How to un-citizenship yourself, how to become a people again and not a person. Then you can go and you can do all the other, get rid of all the other things that bind you. For instance, the signature card at your bank, which I was talking about. I don't know if that all got through or not, but the signature card at your bank, your Social Security. You file all the paperwork that says I'm no longer a part of this. Because that's what it really is going to take. You know, again, we can hold up angry signs, but Walmart is still going to push through, and the government is going to keep pushing through. We can hold up our signs as we spend our Federal Reserve dollars, but really that's not going to accomplish anything. So, unfortunately, the conclusion I've come to is that we really need to start thinking about backing out of our citizenship. And that's the God honest truth coming from someone who's been searching for any other solution. And that's it.
I guess we're coming to a close here or something. I hear some music.
I do. I hear music, too. That'll bring Mike back to us, I think.
Uh-huh.
And indeed it does, yes. Great job, guys.
All right. Well, thank you, Mel, for joining. Sorry about the glitch on my end.
Yeah, that's totally fine.
Awake and can see, and until her conscience has been found.